You are listening to the Brighton Business Show on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. My name is Helen Packham, and this is the April Brighton Business Show. And this month, sadly, I'm not joined by my co-host, Lisa Moore. She will be back next month to take the driving seat. So it's just little old me today. But we've got a fantastic show planned for you today. We have three fabulous guests who are doing amazing things. I'm going to be talking to Jodie Rainsford, who is the founder of Hello Genius. And we're going to be talking about all sorts of fantastic things, including a brand new book he has coming out soon, all around building a cult. I'm going to be talking to Daisy Cresswell, who is the founder of Make Good Trouble, a really fantastic social enterprise that is doing amazing things for families and teens. And I'm going to be talking to Martin Barnes, who is a crocodile wrestler and pitch expert, who is the founder of 8 Seconds to Connect. So usually on this show, I start by talking to Lisa about what's going on in the world. And I think following on from last month, we did a special International Women's Day show, which was a really, really great celebration of women in business in Brighton. And this month, I'm definitely seeing so much a burst of inspiration, burst of creativity coming through after the fog of lockdown. And I myself have really experienced that too. I think when lockdown hit last year, the creative bursts of inspiration that were firing all cylinders previously kind of dwindled to zilch. And I think it's when you go into that survival mode, huge change. For me, my kids were at home. I was having to juggle running a business on my own and look after my kids and homeschool them. You kind of go into survival mode, and it's very difficult to have that creative space in your mind to get those bolts of inspiration, creativity. But about 3 weeks ago, I had one of those half asleep, half awake dreams, and I woke bolt upright in my bed. The ideas were just pouring into my head, and I found the nearest notebook and was scribbling feverishly. And it's just so good to feel that come back in. And I've been speaking to a lot of my clients and a lot of people within the community, and they're feeling the same thing. Some haven't had that problem through lockdown. Some people have been firing on all cylinders. And of course, it depends on your situation. But for me, it's just great that things are obviously opening up again. There's positivity and hope that we can connect with each other in the ways that we were before. I mean, I've already got client meetings booked in my garden, which I'm really, really looking forward to doing and getting back to doing coaching and training people a little bit face to face, which of course Zoom has been great and Microsoft Teams, not so much, but I've really enjoyed reconnecting with people in that way again. And of course, well, fingers crossed, in terms of events and ways that we can connect with each other coming up in the future, it's looking hopeful. So that's kind of just an update on me. I've also been informed today that I'm going to be speaking at the Women Tech Global Conference in June, which I'm very excited about. 100,000 women in tech and allies coming together. It's a virtual conference. And I just got the news in my inbox today that I'll be speaking at that. So that's really cool. But enough about me. As you know, Radio Reverb is available on your DAB radio. It is available on the Radio Reverb website, and it's also available as a podcast and on our Mixcloud account. And what I'm going to do now is come to my first guest, Jodie. Hello, Jodie, and welcome to the Brighton Business Show.
Hello, Helen. Lovely to be here. Thank you.
It's great to have you, Jodie. I've been looking you up. I've been reading about all the fantastic things that are going on with you. But I guess what I'd like to start, because your journey to your business, we'll find out about your business and what you're doing in the book in a moment. But your journey to where you got today was a really interesting one. And I think it's actually quite inspiring for anybody who's on a business journey or thinking of starting a business, if they've taken quite a few different routes. That actually that's okay. And it all adds to what you're doing now. So could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really funny. I never really thought I had much of an eclectic journey until I started telling people what I used to do. And it was only then that I realized that I've always lived with this sense that at some point I'm going to get on with my career. But that'll be the next thing that I do. That'll be the next thing I do. And this thing I'm just doing at the moment, it's a bit tempting. That'll be the next thing I do. I kind of always felt like that. And so when I was at university, you know, I went to universities to study law. And so my thought was, you know, I'll become a lawyer. It's very clear what I want to do. And it very quickly realized that, you know, I love studying law, but actually the practice of law wasn't really for me, being in a corporate environment. The one thing that I think that is, which I'm sure lots of people, especially a lot of people who gravitate towards Brighton, is that you realize very, very quickly whether you are suited to a corporate environment or not. And if you are not sorted to that type, you know, if that type of environment does not suit you, then, you know, you tend to go on journeys like this, that, you know, you're never going to have that journey where you go into somewhere and you stay there for 10 or 15 years and that's it. And that was never going to be me. And so I decided very quickly that I didn't want to go into law. So I thought, I know what I'll do. I'll chase the money and I'll become a journalist instead. So that kind of took me on a different route, working in the sort of the film and TV press. And that was all very exciting, and interviewing celebs and film stars and things like that. And the other thing I think that's really helped sort of change my career as I've gone along is that I've had almost a series of, you know, mini midlife crises that kind of started, you know, it got to a point where when I was, you know, 3 or 4 years into writing for like film and TV press, I just suddenly decided that I wanted to start running, which I think lots of people, that happens to people. All of a sudden, something, you have this urge. And I decided, you know, I did a couple of marathons, and then I had this real urge that I wanted to run this race that I'd read about in this book called the Marathon des Sables, which hadn't really been heard about at the time. Lots of people have done it now. But it's a race across the Sahara, 150 miles across the Sahara. And I don't know what in me thought I wanted to do that. And then I did it, which was great. But then I switched to, you know, careers, and then I started working in health and fitness, which was something I'd never imagined I'd do. And, you know, doing things like, you know, covering, going to Sierra Leone to do marathons there, running 100-miler races, crazy stuff like that. And eventually I left journalism because, you know, it was journalism, you know, and publishing kind of on a sort of a downward trajectory. I'd always been in print before. It was never really online. And then I decided to switch over to become a copywriter and headed to the US to find a mentor there, which introduced me to a whole new world, completely, completely different, completely opened my eyes up to lots of different experiences there and working with different people and, you know, understanding how to use words in a completely different way to sell products to people as well. And I helped, you know, I helped several marketers there, you know, sell millions worth of products. And eventually that morphed into me starting Hello Genius, the agency, and working with, you know, more UK businesses and brands. And so it kind of feels like I've kind of done so much. I actually have to, when I'm talking about this, I actually have to create a timeline for myself to remind me when I did things, because everything, it feels I've been doing everything for such a long time. And then I realize, you know, that I'm only 42. Like, the way I talk about it as though I've had like 5 or 6 different careers. So that's kind of where I've landed at the moment.
So tell us about Hello Genius then, because obviously all of that experience in many different ways has led to this agency that you have now. So what do you do at Hello Genius?
So it's really interesting. So the way, again, I think when most people start businesses, they start a business in kind of based around what they think people want. And eventually you kind of learn to sort of pair it back to what is it that we do that's totally unique that no one else does. And the thing is, and this is a theme that I think, you know, has really followed me throughout my career, and it's the thing that it's only relatively recently we kind of honed upon this idea, is the fact that the one thing that really unites all the different things I've done is me showing up in terms of my personality and showing up in terms of using my voice. And that has got me in trouble in places. Like, we're talking about that, you know, there's certain things you can't do in those places. You can't bring a certain amount of authenticity to different things. Yeah, some people call that authenticity, some people say that's troublemaking. And so and And it's bringing that voice, and it, and really that's how we work with businesses and brands. We help them develop their voice. We help them show up in a different way in their market, so they feel different, they sound different, they have a different relationship with their audience. And that's a lot of that's to do with humor. We're really good with humor. You know, it's something that something that we really like to cultivate and develop. But it's and a lot of it's to do with tone of voice as well, and just thinking of different ways of speaking to people, and thinking, you know, is the way that we're putting ourselves across actually resonating with people, or are we creating barriers? And it's really about tearing those barriers down. And so really it's all a lot of it's to do with you know, the way that we talk about the stories that we use to sell the products, the stories that we use to sell ourselves, and the stories that we use of our customers and our clients, and you know, instead of elevating them and showing people what it is that they can learn from it as well. And it's bringing those things together to around personality and storytelling, and helping brands, you know, really understand how that they can use that in order to grow and build their audiences.
That's great. See, a lot of the stuff that I do is similar, but coming from a different angle in terms of verbal communication and public speaking, and helping my clients to really use stories to communicate, you know, what they want, to deliver messages in articulate ways. So I totally get that. What type of people do you work with? What types of businesses do you work
with? We tend to work with established businesses, but the thing that I really liked about being a journalist, especially when I was freelancer, was being able to work with a different number of people. And there's always this thing, you know, different agencies, they try to niche down, but I just absolutely love working with lots of different types of businesses. It tends to be more where the stage they are. That, you know, when you start a business, you know, you're very excited, you're growing very, very quickly, and then you get to that point where sometimes you kind of lose sight of why you were in business in the first place. You know, you've kind of grown the team. There's some people in the team you might not even speak to on a regular basis, and kind of your business gets to that kind of stage where your growth plateaus, and it feels like there's other people, you know, who are starting to like emerge, who were kind of like you sort of like 5 or 10 years ago. And those are the businesses we work with really well, because those are the ones that they need to kickstart their growth again. They need to reconnect with their story, reconnect with what they with the way that they communicate, and hone their message in a new way to differentiate themselves. And you know, and the thing is, the thing about differentiation and a lot of the stuff that we do is that it's not just a marketing message. It also is the kind of thing that pulls a culture together in a team. It's a thing that makes you feel good about your business. It makes you fall in love with your business again. And I think that's something that's kind of forgotten, that this isn't just about marketing. This is just reconnecting with, you know, you want your business to feel like it's you, and you want it to be, because you're going to show up all the time. And I think, especially, you know, as a result of the pandemic, a lot of people have been rethinking about, you know, what it means to work, what it means to go into business, what it means to serve customers. And it's about aligning all of those things. So it's funny. I don't just see it as a marketing tool. I see it as a much stronger piece of brand building work across a whole business. And it makes a massive difference to the different type of business. But in terms of types of businesses, we work technology, coaches, service businesses, lots of different types. It's really about the stage they're at that makes the difference.
It's so interesting when you talk about internally, it's a bigger piece internally about getting really clear on what the culture is, what the mission is, what you're standing for, and then externally communicating that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing I would say in terms of businesses and brands that we work with is that it's people who are going to be bold and creative. You have to, you know, you have to work really, really hard now to be different from other people. And you have to work hard, you know, at that internal piece, because you have to attract talent. You know, attracting talent, those are the most difficult customers that you've got to do, is the people that are going to help you grow your business, those internally. And so that's it's all connected, and you have to be bold, and you have to kind of think outside the box, and you have to think in new and exciting ways. And that's the thing that I really love about the business. And I love working with people like that who have that vision and can see all of those connect things. It's not a case of, right, how do we come up with a few funny lines of text and a sort of a quirky logo, and then, you know, slap that in as many places as possible and hope for the best. It's when a business starts in the right place, and that comes internally and builds it up from there, then you know, amazing things can happen. And of course, I've seen that, you know, not just in the work that I've done, but also in the hobbies that I've kept and my side projects as well.
Well, let's talk about the other things, because one thing that's really fascinated about me about you is this message around cult building.
Yes. It's a funny story, really, because when you start talking about cult building, it's amazing how many people, some people totally switch off around it and some people are totally switched on with it. And I always say you can tell a lot about someone as to whether they're interested in how to start a cult, being the you know, the sort of the headline to this discussion. But how this happened was something that happened purely by accident. And it was as a result of, at the same time, I finished my career in health and fitness and running journalism was kind of winding down. I met someone at the time, his name was David, and we really got on, and we had kind of like all these conversations about running and about, you know, the whole process of training for marathons and like that. But it was never the same conversations that were ever reflected in any of the media. Like if you read Runner's World or anything, it's always about how to beat your 5K and just really, really dull stuff. And we thought, do you know what? We should record a podcast, because the conversations that we're having in the pub about this are pretty good. You know, maybe no one will listen, but this is quite a good outlet. And so in 2000, I think it was the end of 2014, we just literally got a microphone, sat down in our front rooms and recorded, you know, whatever came into our head, what our favourite races, worst races, embarrassing moments, all that kind of stuff. And we put out an episode a week. And, you know, for the first like couple of years or something, we just thought, you know, it was just an enjoyable thing to do, speaking to each other each week. And eventually it kind of built and built and built. We developed a community, a Facebook community. And, you know, it developed into we've got our own language. We started selling sort of merchandise, because I didn't really think about this at the time. And this is the thing that hit me when I first came to speak about this, was that, the podcast had grown. It's not a massive podcast. It's not like 15,000 people in a group or anything else like some of these other running groups, but it's a kind of a small 4,000 or 5,000 people who are so deeply entrenched in it. And we thought our message of, you know, we just don't take running very seriously, we didn't realize that how many people that resonated with, that for most people, their 5K PB isn't the most important thing about their week. Their most important thing are a myriad of other things. And they might do some running on the side as well. And that's it. You know, and they might do some running and then go to the pub or that. And this resonated, and it took all of the pressure out of running for a lot of people. And so we found that people were, you know, they started creating their own merchandise. They started like writing things on their tops and running them. So we started selling it, and we really let the community lead that. And it got to a point where I was going to do a presentation about this, about a subject of my choice when I was part of the NatWest Accelerator. And I came up with this headline, How to Start Cult. I go, I know what I'll do. I'll do it about the podcast, because that's something that's grown organically and you know, it's quite interesting. And I looked at all the, and I did some research, a sort of retrospective research, looked at all of the traits of a cult. And I was like, oh my God, it is a cult. It has all of the aspects. We get them to do strange things that you know, we wouldn't, like do press ups at the end, or you know, they shout things at each other when they go running. When we first sold the merchandise, I've got no expertise in retail or handling merchandise. And so for every t-shirt we sold, it turned out we lost like £2 or something. And I thought, oh, it'll be all right. It'll be work. It's just a marketing cost. If we get, you know, 50 people out there wearing these t-shirts, it'll be hilarious, stuff like that. In 24 hours, we sold like £2,500 worth of merchandise. And I was like, I couldn't believe it. There was such pent up demand, and it's taken a life on its own, and it's given us so much opportunity. And, you know, it's one of those things where it's a real polarizer. Some people in the running community really hate it. They hate the, you know, the fact that we don't take things seriously, and we get lots of criticism, but you know, it's all about what do you do with that criticism. Either you let it affect you and you change who you are, and you change the way that you show up, or you own it. And you know, we did things like, you know, whenever we either get 5-star reviews or 1-star reviews, and when we get 1-star reviews, we totally celebrate it. We put that on t-shirts, we put it on banners, you know, we use those bad reviews, you know, wherever we can. And the thing is, and this is the thing to think about it, you know, we're not thinking about bringing new people in. That's not what we're thinking about, all the people that are existing within that community. And when they see that, they love it. And that kind of goes back to the message you were saying about, you know, your business and your team and working it. It's doing things for the people that are already within your fold. And there's a certain virality to it because they are keen to then bring other people in. Like cult followers, the best cult followers are the ones who are newly indoctrinated, and people go out and they talk around it. And we got invited to host a stage at the National Running Show. Now we host the Ultra Zone now, and we managed to get great guests, but I turn up on the stage. People do so much stuff for us for free, and it boggles my mind as to why they do. You know, they'll man the merchandise stand, they'll edit the podcast for us, they'll do all that. Lorna, down in Devon, she runs the whole of the merchandise operation for absolutely nothing, just the sheer joy of it. And I'm like, I it's utterly bizarre, but they all believe in it. That's the thing. They all believe in it, and it has this cult like quality. We even have a hashtag, not a cult. In order to try and deny it, but it's really quite outstanding how it has taken off. And so really the book is talking about how to apply those lessons in your business.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And really, you know, we think, you know, you can swap out cult with community, really, you know, in terms of as the essence of a community and what, how people take on roles and how people support each other and all of those things. But the cult kind of thing just takes it to that next level, doesn't it? In terms of internal language.
The thing is, like startup, like Silicon Valley startups, they have to create a cult like atmosphere in order to get people to do to buy into a mission and get people to do things that you know they wouldn't otherwise do, to get people, you know, working the ridiculous hours and things like that. And so, you know, it's about the thing that I learned from that was how to apply a lot of those things with the kind of the brand building stuff that we're doing with the businesses. And so it's aligning those two things, whereas I'd always thought they were separate.
Right. So the book explores that in terms of how you can actually do that. And there's a methodology around that.
Yeah, absolutely. So the thing I realized was that actually the two things align beautifully, but I'd always put them as a separate, you know, as this separate thing, you know, and putting this packaging of a cult around it makes it really easy to understand the relationship that you want with your audience. So, you know, one of the key messages from the book is that brand loyalty is dead. You know, we live in an environment where there's so much choice, you know, even with things like reviews and recommendation, things like that, it's still so difficult. So the really important trigger that really helps people identify with your brand is belonging. And how do you create that belonging? And it's taking that a step forward and understanding, you know, what are the specific things that you need to put in place. And so the book split into two parts. There's almost the mission, the strategy piece. How do you set about differentiating yourself? What does differentiation mean? How do you put a message together that makes sense? And the other important thing is, you know, who are the enemies of the piece? One of the most controversial parts of the book and the controversial part of the sort of cult building is that there are enemies. And that doesn't necessarily mean like your competitors, but there are, and this is more about empathizing with your audience. You know, what did your audience not like? What antagonizing? What causes them problems? And so, you know, for the podcast, it was obvious. It was, you know, people taking running too seriously, because what it meant that they couldn't be, they didn't feel included when they came to clubs, they didn't feel included in other places. And so it's understanding about, you know, what is the counterpoint to what you're doing. And then there's a tactical aspect, is, you know, how do you develop belonging in people? How do you make people feel welcome? How do you make them, you know, feel strong enough to join your community and then go out and get other people to join it as well, the right type of people? And so it all kind of goes back to thinking about, you know, the way that you structure your message, but also the things that you can put in place. And it's very specific in that respect. And I use examples from the podcast, from businesses that I've worked with, as well as, you know, more high profile examples as well that a lot of people will know.
That's fantastic. I cannot wait to get the book. So when's it out?
So the book will be out end of May. The exact date hasn't been decided yet, but end of May. And so we're sort of like gearing up to launch for that period.
That's awesome. And if people want to find out more about you and Hello Genius or anything else, where can they find you, Jodie?
So if you're interested in the book, I think the best place to go to is what we do, we've got a pre-notification list. And on that list, if you join it, there'll be updates around the book, as well as, you know, I'll be sharing advice and giving some sort of early snippets about what you can expect. And if you go to hellogenius.co.uk/a-cult, you just need to sign up there. If you want to find out more about me, you can go to hellogenius.co.uk about the agency, or jodyrainsford.com if you want to find out about me personally.
Oh, thank you so much. It's so, so inspiring. And I think will be inspiring for other people. And I absolutely love, I'm one of those people that love what you're doing and love the idea of
thank you.
And I can see how it can polarize people, but that is awesome.
That is awesome. That's exactly what we want.
It's about challenging and disturbing and polarizing. And I can see how that's really taken off. And huge congratulations to you. And congratulations on the launch of your book. And thank you for coming on the show.
No, it's my absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. You're listening to 97.2 FM. This is Radio Reverb. It's the Brighton Business Show, and this is the April edition. I'm Helen Packham, and I'm not joined by my co-host Lisa Moore today, but I am joined by some fabulous guests. So we've just heard from Jody, and now I am moving over to our next guest, who is Daisy Cresswell, who is the founder of Make Good Trouble. Welcome to the Brighton Business Show, Daisy. How are you today?
I'm very good, thank you. It's lovely to be on the show.
It is. And I actually connected with you because I think it was a few shows ago, I was focusing on young entrepreneurs in the Brighton area. And one of the young entrepreneurs who was on the show, Chloe, had started a business in lockdown, and she was making these amazing hoodies. And that's how we kind of initially connected. But I know that you have done work with the show. And I think that's a really great lead in into your story and a little bit about the history of where you've got to and what you actually do and how you're helping so many people.
Oh, thank you. So I'm the founder of Make Good Trouble, which is a social enterprise based in Brighton. And I founded the company because at the time I was a mum of two teenagers. One, they're now a bit older, but I couldn't find the help that I needed for my younger daughter at the time when she was at 13. And I realised, there was relationship difficulties between us. I then opened up this door of mental health issues, which I just, you know, talking to other parents and then talking to teachers and, people in education, people in either public health or they're all overstretched. And this was pre-COVID. And I studied graphic design at St. Martin's a long time ago, and I was taught to problem solve. That's what I do. And so I just thought there's got to be a different way to do this, to address mental health in young people and try and use technology for good purpose. So rather than say, take the phones away, don't be online. And I get that. I get that that's frustrating for parents. But how can you do it so that the provision is actually fit for a teenager of this generation, not of ours? So it's sort of, and it's absolutely mushroomed since we started it in 2018. So, yeah.
How did it start?
Well, it kind of started because I had an issue, because I had a problem. And then there's a guy called Steve Bustin, who I have to give a big shout out and a thank you to, who is a very well-known local entrepreneur himself. And he was organising the Brighton Summit at the time. And the speakers, and I used to be on the board of the Brighton Fringe with him, and he invited me to be a keynote speaker at the Brighton Summit. And I stood up and I did a speech all about my then current business, which was a social media content business for TV and radio shows. So it was all about entertainment, basically. And right at the end, I said, but I think there's something else I need to do, and this is address mental health issues in young people and address the use of technology. And I kind of did a poll at the end and just said, who needs help with that? And I was just mobbed. And at the end of it, I put, I think we need to make some good trouble. And that's kind of that sort of name sort of stuck. And in the audience, weirdly, was who is now one of my colleagues, Jane Keating, was in the audience. And I could see her up in the audience. And I thought, gosh, she's a double of someone I was at sixth form with. And it's her sister. Oh. I went, I want to work with you. And so it's basically run by me, my sister, because my sister is a copywriter. So I'm a visual person and I do all the selling. And my, so it goes back to the agency sort of world that Jodie knows so well. My sister's a copywriter. I'm the sort of, I do all the selling and the sort of strategy. And Jane, who's our other colleague, is just the person that makes, she used to be a producer on TV shows. She worked on Super Nanny, stuff like that. So she's the one that actually makes it really happen.
Yeah. So. And I'm intrigued with the structure of the business and how you actually, because it's, I think often people, when you say social enterprise, people wonder, what does that actually look like in terms of revenue generation and you know, how that works and what is the actual nuts and bolts of the business? Are you able to explain that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, on a personal level, I have to say, I mean, you know, I'm a middle-aged woman who set up a business. The first time I set up a business was when I just turned 40, was going through a divorce. And the second time I set up a business was when I just turned 50. So it's kind of crazy. But so the commercial business that I had, which was a limited company, you know, it's the way everybody knows that, you know, you've got to find your client base and you've got to try and get as much repeat business as you can. And, you know, you're running the books, you're trying to make everybody happy and you're trying to deliver the work. But with a social enterprise, the massive difference, I think, is how good it makes you feel. If you can prove social impact, especially for your local community, it makes you really happy to walk down the street and think, I'm actually putting something into this community, something that's needed. And it also hugely opens up a world of other people. You know, the Brighton Summit, the Brighton Chamber is an absolutely brilliant organisation. And they were, Sarah, who runs it, an amazing person, that they were instrumental in my business taking off, because there are so many people in Brighton who want to help other people. There's a lot of business coaches. There's a lot of, you know, life coaches. There's also a load of small businesses that want to help each other. So when we were first starting out, we needed a lot of favours. And so we got them. People would lend us studio space, or they'd lend us some kit or whatever, you know. So you that was absolutely amazing. But in terms of running the business, like any business, it's massively difficult, because what you want to do, I'm a creative. What I want to do is go out and be shooting either, you know, a video or, you know, a show or recording a radio show. But in reality, the hardest part of the job is all pre-production and running the business, you know, the operations and the stuff behind it. But in terms of money, you know, I sometimes feel like Jerry Maguire. I'm going, show me the money. Where is it? It's very, very difficult. And I wouldn't say to anybody that it isn't. And one day I would like to do a talk about that, because it is, you know, when you're a CIC, a community interest company, you're halfway between a charity and a limited company. So what the good thing about that is, you are eligible for grant funding. You don't have to give that back. You can spend it on the things that you need to spend it on, in theory, if you find the right fit for funder. The downside to that is applying for grant funding can be soul destroying, because a lot of it is faceless. Now, I'm used to going into a room and selling and persuading, the art of persuasion, persuading someone to buy into what you want to sell them. You can't do that with very rarely. Well, now I've got a new strategy. I don't apply for any grant funding without having rung them up and spoken to somebody and trying to build a relationship even with a funder before you've even started. And you still might not get the money, but you then understand why you didn't get the money. The other side of that is being a service. So COVID has, you know, we had to realign the business completely for the best, actually. So we're talking about silver linings, but the other money is generated by being a service to public health, the clinical commissioning group, you know, the local authorities, because they need people like us to get the stuff, you know, through the schools or through the parents, especially. So
it's exhausting.
And going back to your point at the beginning of the show, I have a notebook by the side of my bed, especially with COVID, because I had a real problem sleeping. Get up in the middle of the night, I can just write it all down, get it out, get it off. Sometimes you wake up and go, it's a brilliant idea. And other days you wake up and go, what is that?
That's really, thank you for sharing that, because it's, you know, really interesting to see how that works from a social perspective, and how it makes you feel is a really great way of describing that. And you have a network. Sorry.
One of going to mention about that was really important. That's something my dad said to me. My dad's 84. And there were times last year with COVID where we were really struggling, you know, like so many businesses, the revenue had just dried up. There were points where we still run the other business. We're paying ourselves out the other business, and this business, we were volunteering pretty much. But my dad said something really important. He said, never forget the power of the familiar. And that's really important. Just when you think you might give up, all the doors are open. And sure enough, this year, all the buses are coming at once. So we're really busy, which is absolutely great.
Yeah, that's
really important to keep going, because know that the reason for your business is out there. You know there is the demand. Is trying to convert that into a business model is the hardest part. Really.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I think that's going to, you know, it really helpful for so many people. And you've got the structure in terms of working. You're co-creating with young people. Right. I love that you're doing that. And you've got learning programs that. And pathways to employment and training programs that are helping young people.
Everything is co-created by young people. Otherwise it's irrelevant, because it's all about how they feel, their relationship with adults, their relationships with the police, their relationships with their parents, their relationships with their teachers, all the adults that make the decisions on their behalf every day. Why aren't we asking them to solve the problems themselves?
Fantastic. Yeah.
Thinking, that's the point, really.
And when you talk about harnessing technology, what I love about your Instagram page, when I see the posts come up, is that you're shouting out these young collaborators. You're giving them a platform, which is just fantastic.
Yeah, and in terms of the co-creation, what they learn is they learn vocational skills in media production. So at the moment, since COVID, just about everything we're doing is audio. Because it's as you're finding here, it's the easiest way to produce something. It's much, much harder to do something in filming and everything else. I mean, the problem for us as well is that our market is young people and children and teens, especially, and they were all either off school or they're in school, or there's all the COVID, you know, we couldn't do anything face to face at all. So everything we've had to be doing has been remote. So audio has been a really key focus for us. And they learn how to make broadcast quality, top quality. You know, we've designed, actually in the middle, we're now designing a sound design course, which the idea is we'll do it as a some kind of short, almost like a summer school, like, you know, instead of going on zip wires, you're going to create a podcast. But so that's really exciting. There's all sorts of things that we've got in the pipeline at the moment. But we're part of the Cities of Learning digital badges. So every young person that works with us, even if they only show up for a day, or even if they only show up for half an hour for a record, but they have something to input, they will be given an engagement digital badge or a participation badge, or they can go up the layers on that. And that's fantastic. Last year we gave out, in 2020, considering there was COVID, we gave out 54 digital badges to young people.
Brilliant. So
really proud of that.
That's fantastic.
It gives they learn communication skills, they learn how to organise themselves, they see how our structure, our filing structure. I mean, we're still... You know, our file naming, I bored to death with the file naming convention, but we're just doing all the ops at the moment for a new project, and it's fascinating. But, you know, they've got to learn all that. They're going to then go, they might want to go somewhere else in the country and work for a bigger production company, you know, one of the big names, and they will have something on their CV that a lot of people won't have. So, you know.
And what ages are you sort of, what's the youngest that you're...
Well, we're doing a schools outreach program at the moment with a fantastic project through Sussex University called The Res, which is all about being resilient, and it's a comic book and a podcast. It's amazing. And we're doing the schools outreach for that, a young person's outreach, and that is key stage two, so that's like 7 to 11. But our mainstay has always been teenagers. It's been that awkward adolescent brain. We pick the hard bit, but it's absolutely wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. So, yeah.
Just see how rewarding that is. Obviously, my eldest is 9, but she's got that type of brain, and I know that something like that would really benefit her. But friends who have teenagers, I can really understand what an amazing thing this is. So tell us, Daisy, how can people find out more about this? How can they get in touch with you? I know that you have a community on Facebook. Tell us about those ways that people can connect.
As soon as we were supposed to start Raising Teens, the radio show. So we produce a radio show called Raising Teens. It's on BBC Sussex and Surrey. And we were supposed to start series three when COVID hit, when lockdown hit. So we actually did do series three in lockdown. It was our first remote production. But as soon as the first lockdown hit, we set up a Facebook group called Raising Teens in Lockdown. So it's got a really active, engaged parent network on there. There's teachers on there. There's all sorts of brilliant people on there. Experts in mental health are on there from, you know, public health. A lot of guests have been on our radio show are on the group. And it's a brilliant self-perpetuating positive space for people to come on and say, I'm struggling. Who can help me with this? And you get other parents helping, great, great wise words, people who have been through things before. And if we've got an escalation procedure. So if there's something really urgent, then we make sure the right expert gets on there straight away. But also our website, makegoodtrouble.co.uk, has got all our links on it, most of our back catalogue on there. So you can see what we've done to date. So yeah.
Gosh, just hearing about all the amazing things you're doing, how you can manage to get through that lockdown period and things are really picking up, is so inspiring and great to hear. And particularly as the amount of people that you're helping with this, and young people and parents as well. So thank you so much for coming on today and sharing that with us. Please do go and check that out. It sounds like it's just an incredible thing. And I will be getting my daughter to have a look at that too. Thank you so much, Daisy, for coming on the show.
Thanks so much.
You're listening to Radio Reverb, the Brighton Business Show on 97.2 FM. I always love doing these monthly shows because it's just so great to hear what people are doing, what incredibly inspiring, creative things people are doing. So now I'm going to move on to my third guest, who is Martin Barnes and the founder of 8 Seconds to Connect. Martin, welcome to the Brighton Business Show. It's great to have you here.
Hello, Helen. How are you doing?
I'm very, very well. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. I'm really enjoying listening to all the other speakers. Super inspiring and interesting.
It is. So, Martin, I'm really intrigued about, you know, I understand what you do. You're a pitch coach and consultant, but you are also a crocodile wrestler. And I'd really love to hear a little bit about your story and how this is linked, if it's linked at all, to what you do now.
Excellent. Well, no. So basically, whenever anybody asks me what I do, I tell them I'm a crocodile wrestler. And then I pause. And I get these wonderful raised eyebrows, confused looks, people smile and say, really? And I say, that's what it feels like being the father of 3-year-old twins.
I see.
From the moment they rush into our room in the morning, jump on the bed, daddy, 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 to when we finally get them back to sleep at the end of the day, it is crocodile wrestling. I have these two beautiful girls and they are snapping at my heels every day. And that's what it feels like. And when I'm not crocodile wrestling, I'm a pitch coach and I help you tell stories that catch attention. Mm. And so basically, crocodile wrestler is a pitch, it's a story, and it catches attention and it catches intrigue. So it's sort of me leading by what I'm doing. So I'm not telling, I'm showing.
Yeah.
And it has wonderful results because it starts conversations where people use the words intrigue, interested, tell me about it. And so we create this fantastic platform for attention. And that sort of takes you to my website, 8 Seconds to Connect. You have 8 seconds to connect, whether you're pitching, networking, on a radio show, you have to catch attention really fast. And I want to help people do that by telling stories.
I love it. I really, really love that. See, there's links with talking to Jodie before. Very lot links about, you know, my business and how I help people using storytelling to connect further with people. But I love how you've actually used that as a demonstration there. So tell us a bit how, you know, how this came to be, how you came to do this.
Great. Yeah, well, so basically last year I was finishing off a postgraduate course in education. So I was learning how to teach better. And part of my final essay focus was on pitching. And I read a report from the Business Harvard Review that sort of said your pitch needs a pitch because, you know, buzzwords come in and out of favor. And so a lot of people were saying elevator pitch, what's your elevator pitch? And the concept of this article was like, sometimes you'll just jump into the pitch before you even have attention. and you'll have laid your best lines down when people are still tuning in from what they were just thinking about to who you are. And I thought, that makes so much sense. And how can you, and then the article was, I can share it later so we can put it out to the listeners, was the writer really laid it out about how to sort of catch attention first. And that made so much sense to me. And so sort of 2013 to 2019, my business was called Mountains of Imagination. And I was a pitch coach, presentation consultant. And my view was like, everybody presents. And I want to help you enjoy presenting. And I want to use my imagination to help that happen. But it took me a long time to realize that actually I didn't have a clear audience. I was talking to everybody, and therefore I was talking to nobody. And so it was as I finished my postgrad in education, as I sort of focused more, I realized I want to help founders and leaders pitch with confidence. I still want them to enjoy presenting, but I want to make sure that when they start their conversations, they have the attention of their audience. And so it sort of has metamorphosized from Mountains of Imagination to 8 Seconds to Connect. And now it's like, hook them in quick. You don't have to start at the beginning. You don't have to go through all the details. You have to get to the meat of what a crocodile would want to snap onto. And again, a crocodile launches out of the water in seconds. They can sprint super fast, and they make a massive impact. So to me, it's sort of like it became a much clearer way of identifying who I'm trying to help.
I love that. And again, I can really draw themes with when I'm as a speaker coach and I'm helping people with their talks and, you know, really like, you know, coming in at the middle or coming in at the end of a story and just really, I remember someone saying to me, it's like a dance. So you go onto the stage and you hold your hand out to the audience straight away and they have a few, like literally seconds to decide whether they want to take your hand and go on that dance or not. And it's the same thing, isn't it? So what the clients that you help, what are they pitching for?
So before when it was Mountains of Imagination, it was a lot of corporate clients. So a lot of business leaders. And actually I was based in Beijing. So I lived in China from 2004 to 2019. And then we came home for Christmas. My wife was Chinese. We brought the kids back for Christmas. And then of course, 2020 happened and we're still here. So we're sort of COVID, we're marooned by COVID, which is actually really nice to be back in England after such a long time. So my client base has totally changed because all my clients previously were in China and I used to work with the Volkswagen Group China, BMW, Google, Amazon, local tech companies. I also did a lot of work with startups. So I was a public speaking mentor with a lot of startups based out of Shanghai, Taiwan, all across China. And then basically through my move from Mountains of Imagination to 8 Seconds to Connect, I now focus on founders and leaders. So I really want to help the founders or entrepreneurs who are on the edge of the spotlight. People who are like, can't go to sleep because of their ideas, have too many things to think about, know that pitching and public speaking is really important. They're on the edge of the spotlight going, should I get in? And I want to say here, like you said, take my hand, come with me and we'll stand. And I think I can see from Jody on this call, I think Jody's standing right now when he's pitching and talking. I'm standing right now. I want people to stand with confidence and really share stories that catch attention. And that I always say a pitch turns into a conversation. And so I want to help founders let their 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 2 minutes become a conversation with mentors, advisors, investors, teammates, legal, media, coaches. So I've gone from everybody presents to founders, leaders, and especially those nervous about to take that first step. So there's a lot of people that will help entrepreneurs get A round investment, C round investment. And I've done that and I can do that. But I'm much more interested in like, hey, if you're about to make that first step, let's start really strong and let me help you enjoy that moment. Because if you enjoy pitching, your audience enjoys listening and your ideas blossom and bloom and off they go.
I love it. And I think, do you have a simple to use pitch structure that you're able to kind of give us an idea about?
Absolutely. So you know, just like Daisy, I was trained as a graphic designer. I'm also a trained graphic designer a long time ago. And so I'm super visual, but I'm also really analytical. So I kind of mix up sort of sketching on whiteboards and on my iPad to sort of like making crazy amounts of lists. So I'm super process driven. I don't use my processes as much as I should, but I do create them. And so I have a structure called the 3-beat mountain. And it's basically a pitch structure that anybody can use to share a 30-second pitch, an 8-second pitch, a 6-minute pitch, a 20-minute presentation. And it's kind of based on the idea of the universal storytelling structure, the 3-act play. You know, it's been written about countless times, and it's cross-cultural, cross-generation, timeless, you know, right from like the Odysseys of the Greek gods and the myths right up to sort of pitching on Clubhouse right now. So it's basically a 3-act play. And if you imagine a mountain with 3 rises and a peak, and then another rise and a peak, and another rise and a peak, and then a call to action. So the 3-beat mountain has 5 points. You introduce yourself super fast. The first beat or peak could be, let me catch your attention. The second beat is, let me prove my credibility. Let me prove my expertise. The third beat is, boom. Wow, gong, oh, I'm going to remember that. And then the finish is the call to action. Ask me a question. Let's set up a meeting. Connect me with your decision makers. So it's basically, don't share everything. Keep it short, sweet, and concise. And if you can visualize the mountain, you can share that really easily. And because you're sharing 3 things, the audience can receive them. They can process them, and then they can repeat them to other people. And that's when your ideas grow.
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. That's fantastic, and visually a really simple way of remembering. And simplicity is so important in communication and pairing things back and making things crystallized. So I absolutely love that. And of course, I love the boom, wow bit. I'm going to remember that, because of course that's the, you know, when it comes to pitching or public speaking or delivering information verbally, people remember few things, but it's the things that they really take away. It's those golden nuggets that's going to stick in their mind and then translate into action or whatever it is you want them to do. So I love that. That's brilliant. That's brilliant. That's brilliant. So tell us, you've got like various ways that you help people. I know that you've got programs and courses. Tell us a little bit about the things that you offer and what you've got coming up.
Yeah. So I do a lot of, I'm like a panel. I judge on a lot of pitching competitions. And so I sort of get involved. I did something with the Brighton Chamber of Commerce. That's how we got connected, through Lisa. I work with a lot of universities, a lot of startups and founders. And so what I'm about to launch is a 14-day pitch accelerator. So it's a blend of online videos, of content you can watch in your own time from your phone, and then live sessions where we're going to be on a Zoom call and we're actually going to be putting into practice how to improve your pitching skills. So it's a 14-day program. I'm in the final stages of figuring out all of the back-end mechanics. And so it's taken a lot longer than it should have done. However, it's about to launch hopefully in the next 2 or 3 weeks. And then basically we're going to have small groups of, say, maybe 6 people, because I need it to be, the focus is on the group, not me. Like, you can, whatever I can deliver remotely by video that you can watch, that's on video. But where we want to sort of interact with other people, that's on a Zoom call. And so it's all about creating these moments that people can participate. Because there's a great Harvard educationalist called David Perkins, and he references like knowledge is having a flexible performance. How can you adapt your skill set to new challenges? And that's when you prove what you know and you grow. Mm. And that's what I want people to do in these Zoom sessions.
Wow, I love that. So that's going to be launching soon. You also have a pro, is there another program that I see?
So I do a monthly event called Making the Pitch.
That was it.
And so that's every month I do a case study breakdown. So like I'm sitting on so many presentations I've made for big companies that I can't really show, or I haven't been able to show. But what I do is I get permission to show them. And then I do a case study breakdown where I take people behind the slides and invite them to come in and look at how I made this pitch, what my process was. And I have another process called the 8 steps to Showtime, which is how you go from a whiteboard to enjoying the spotlight. And so I do these case study breakdowns based on that framework, so people can see how did we go from, you know, working with a client to focus on their message on a whiteboard. How did we take that into digital tools, develop the script, develop wireframe slides. So I do that as a monthly thing. It's normally the second Tuesday of every month. So we're on our third one coming up next week. And then, of course, there'll be another one in May, another one in June. And it's just a great way to sort of show the work I've done, let people see it, and then also see how it can make sense for them in their presentation challenges. So the way I pitch it is, are you making presentations for your leader or are you giving presentations? Whichever situation you're at, this is going to be useful, because I've made presentations for the board of directors of Volkswagen headquarters in Germany. You know, I can't get more senior than these guys that run 12 different car brands. And how you make a presentation for that person is very different than how you make a pitch for a sort of startup in Asia or a startup in the UK who's got half an idea, a few slides, and, you know, needs some money.
Oh, that's fantastic. So you've got, it's coming up the 13th of April, 7 p.m. that event.
Yeah, so the next one's the 13th of April, and then the following one will be the second Tuesday in May. I need to schedule that one in. But basically, it's second Tuesday of every month.
That's fantastic.
That's free. That's free to join.
Oh, brilliant. That's brilliant. Yeah. So if people just want to connect with you, they want to just have a chat with you, find out more about you online, how do they find you, Martin?
Well, because I'm wrestling crocodiles, my time is, sparse. As a lot of parents here tonight, today, you're going to understand that. So I'm in LinkedIn. My attention is in LinkedIn. So there are too many chat platforms. There's too many social media accounts to manage right now. So I am literally LinkedIn all the time. So please come and find me. Martin Barnes, crocodile wrestler, is in my bio. I'd love to connect with anybody, everybody out there. And through LinkedIn is where I put all of my articles, posts, announcements, events. It's where I'm going to be promoting the 14-day pitch accelerator. And I think it's a fantastic platform. It's getting more social. People have really transformed it recently. And if you want to have your business hat on, but also make great connections with people and get and learn so much. I'm astonished at how much people are sharing right now. And it's fantastic. So LinkedIn is the place.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for coming on the Brighton Business Show. It's really interesting to hear your story, to demonstrate how you can really pull people in just with a few words and just by thinking about your words. And definitely check Martin out on LinkedIn, connect with him. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Helen.
You've been listening to the Brighton Business Show on 97.2 FM Radio Reverb. My name is Helen Packham, and I am now closing off the April show. Next month, I will rejoin my co-host, Lisa Moore. She'll be taking the driving seat and will be speaking to some more incredibly inspiring guests who are all doing amazing things in the area of business and entrepreneurship in Brighton and surrounding areas. So we will look forward to tuning in with you next month.